Hello and welcome to Behind the Mic Radio. I am your host, Dawn Mack, and so glad to be here with you on a Wednesday evening. I am always happy for this part of the week because it's not Monday and Friday's coming, and it's just dead in the middle. And so my week is going great, and I hope that yours is too. And I want to thank everyone for joining us tonight. And we're so excited about our very special guest. And to give you a little background on him, he is an award-winning actor with a phenomenal comic timing. He has guest starred on The Whole Truth, Terry's Law, Two and a Half Men, Desperate Housewives, Dexter, Cold Case, and 20 Good Years. He has also graced the big screen in The Soloist, No Saints for Sinners, Kiss the Bride, Trick This Train, and Boomerang. And he recently starred in the role of KK in the movie K-11, which was just released on DVD and Blu-ray on April 23rd. And he, in addition to all that, he also stars alongside Paul Sorvino and Erica Christensen in the movie musical How Sweet It Is. We are proud to welcome Ralph Cole Jr. Hello.
Hi, Dawn Mack. Thank you.
Well, hello to you. It's so good to have you with us tonight. Thank you for being here.
I very much appreciate you welcoming me to your show, and I'd like to give a big shout-out to Planet Eartha. Hello.
Hello, Planet Eartha. Hello.
Thank you for my wonderful introduction. I appreciate that.
Oh, you're so very welcome. Very well deserved. So, you know, you need to have those accolades said about you every now and again, just so people can realize the magnitude of the things that you've done in your career, you know, just on so many different platforms. I mean, it's just
an incredible ride.
It's
nice to sit back and listen to it because I do feel accomplished and very grateful that I've been able to participate in all these different avenues in the show business industry.
Oh, yes, indeed. And I want to kind of start by talking a little bit about you and the showbiz industry and kind of going back a little bit to actually asking you what first drew you to acting and to what you do now.
Well, honestly, Dawn, I was born to perform. And I truly, as far as I can remember, always enjoyed the Easter pageant, watching Father Knows Best and I Love Lucy, watching musicals, seeing dancers and big extravaganza numbers. I was always attracted to that and to color. And as a result, it culminated, because of my parents' support, into me getting to participate in these different venues. And as a result, it has always been a constant through line in my life, from starting off in school and going to elementary school, junior high school, college, living in New York City for 20 years, and then coming back to my hometown of Los Angeles. So I am really one of those people to say truly was born this way.
Well, and to have been born in Los Angeles, I think it was, you know, personally for me, if I had been born in L.A., I would almost have to become, you know, involved in some sort of aspect of the entertainment industry because it is all around you out there. I mean, everywhere you turn, there is some aspect of it, you know, right there front and center. I mean, L.A. is where it's at, that in New York, and you've kind of been in some of the key places you need to be to do what you do.
You're absolutely right, and that's all fortune, just good fortune. I was born in Burbank, California, by my father, who was an intern at the time at Burbank Hospital. My mother was a wonderful school teacher, and as a result, and because my parents were now based here in California, they moved to Los Angeles, and that's where I was born and raised. So, yeah, I mean, how fortuitous that I was born wanting to perform and be in this industry and happened to land in the city that does it, like you're saying. So, and I've always looked at that and considered that very grateful that has happened because, you know, I take my hat off to all the people who have sojourned to Los Angeles to be a part of this environment, whereas I just got birthed here and was just here by virtue of my parents, so I never take that for granted. And, yes, I got to live in New York as well, and two major hubbubs for the entertainment industry, and I'm glad that I got to hone my Broadway, off-Broadway, regional theater skills on the East End, on the East Coast, rather, and then getting to bring all of that 20-year experience back to Los Angeles, where I get to live the rest of my life. So I am fortunate to have been in both in two great hubbubs.
Yes, indeed, because, you know, out there it can be such a, you know, dog-eat-dog kind of world because there's so much competition and so many artists, aspiring artists, established, are all fighting for, you know, that one position, it seems like, you know, and there are only so many to go around. And so, you know, but to listen to your story and to your humble beginnings that kind of grew into what it is, I mean, it seems like you've led quite the charmed life in a way because, you know, you were kind of in the right place at the right time almost.
I mean, you're exactly right. I mean, like, I was. I was born into this family that lived here in Los Angeles, and I'm an only child, so I grew up with an entertainment kind of persona growing up, so I feel very fortunate.
Yes, indeed. Now, you mentioned that, you know, you perform Broadway, off-Broadway, and you've had, obviously, you know, some vast theater experience. And talk a little bit about the theater and what about that kind of fascinated you the most?
Well, I loved the interaction with the audience and getting the immediate response through either applause or through laughter or through a gasp. And I guess there was always a nice power and a nice feeling of buoyancy to make someone laugh or make someone feel good. I believe that's a human feeling that's just inherent in all of us or in most of us, and that was something that was very well developed in me and that I wanted to hone. It felt good to make other people feel good, and so one hand, as they say, washed the other, and with live theater, it's really fun to be able to perform and create something that you want to try, and you try it, and you get the immediate response of your audience. So that's one thing that's always attracted me to live theater.
Oh, yeah. And now, you know, you're also so very comedic. And now, was that something that was kind of natural along with the desire and drive, even as a young child, to want to do this sort of thing? Or did this kind of come out of your training as an actor?
No, again, Dawn, I'm just like this. And it just happened. Like, my father was always really gregarious also. And I am just a fun-loving guy. And I'm really just blessed with my energy. And people ask me at the gym, like, are you on caffeine? I mean, how do you do that? And the thing is, it's like I'm just blessed to have this energy because my father was a physician. So I learned at a very young age what it was like to be around sick people. And I decided that was something that I was not akin to. And that I did not want to be a part of my life. And as a result, I mean, you know, we live our lives as healthy as possible, but I was going to say as a result, I always lived not wanting to be that sickly person and wanted to be active and wanted to not take for granted that I could get up and run and jump and skip and scream and sing. And so many other children could not. So And fortunately, that, along with having a good constitution, allowed me to not be a sickly child, to be fun-loving, to see the glass half full rather than half empty. Why do we have to have guns? Why can't people just, if you want to dislike somebody, just, you know, call them a name if you want, but that I have to hurt them? You know, so I really came from that kind of world and those kind of values. And, you know, and of course, as you grow up, you know, you see the reality of what it really is. But in spite of that, I still have the good comedy about me because that's who I am. And when all is said and done and all of this stuff that we're all trying to do to live longer and look younger and to feel the best as possible, one thing that's universal that you can't help it if it really moves you and inspires you is laughter. And
so true.
That's just something that fortunately has just been in my system, and I'm grateful for it.
And you know, you're so inspiring to me. It's interesting that you mentioned that, you know, it's kind of been part of your makeup as who you are. And because just ironically, I think it was yesterday during my day job, one of my fellow coworkers, he stopped by my desk and he said, "Can I ask you a personal question?" And I said, maybe. You know, you don't ever know where these things are going to go sometimes.
Exactly.
And he says, "Why are you always so happy?" And I didn't really know if he meant, was I on caffeine? Like you know, people have asked you, and I said, I just am. It's just who I am. And I think, you know, I can identify with you in that way because I think we just are who we are. And I'm just
laughing, listening to your answer to him. It's like, I just am. Now back off.
So true. But, you know, you think, but just, I tell you this because I just think about that sometimes. I think, you know, really, if we're being truly who we are is truly going to shine through to others, and they're going to see it, and it's going to be consistent. And what I found so interesting was that this was not the first time my coworker had asked me this. He asked me the same thing about 6 months ago, and I didn't remind him of that, but I think he's still kind of baffled going, gosh, it's 6 months later, and she's never been cranky a day on the job. She's still pleasant. I mean, what gives? You know, it really is perplexing to some people, you know.
I totally understand. People ask me, you know, are you always this energetic? And yes, I have down days and I have downtime, and I'm an only child, so I'm used to being alone, and I love being alone, and I enjoy that. And I don't feel like I used to like not like people that I met who were like me, and it was like, oh my God, am I like that? They're so on and shut up already. But I realized, no, I'm organic. This is who I am. People are attracted.
Mm-hmm.
I'm attracted to people, and like you said, it's our makeup. This is how we are. You know, we all have our different RPMs that we run at, and it's just like when I drive down the street here in Los Angeles. I mean, I'll zoom ahead of somebody, and we'll still end up at the stoplight together, but the point is I just needed to move faster to get there. The plodding along didn't work for me, and that's how we are all in life. Some people are a lot more laid back. Some people are always cranky. Some people are always happy. And the people like us that are always happy, I remember this one woman at the gym said this to me. You know, someone said, you know, is that smile for real? And she was offended because she did smile a lot. And that's just the way she is. You know,
It's
like, why are some people's babies just the happy baby and other people's babies are the cranky baby? We're just all, you know, so it's nice that you get those compliments too, Dawn, or those observations, you know, because it is not always the norm, you know, and there are times like, you know, like I say, I get disgruntled in traffic or this person is moving slowly or this person I feel is an idiot. So,
mm-hmm.
But for the most part, you know, I just let all that go. And because I don't want to feel like I'm a Pollyanna, like, you know, because those people get on my nerves too. It's like, really, really, it's like, there are bad things, and there are crappy days, and there are fucked up things, you know. And
yeah.
I'm sorry that a lot of my shows that I like just got the axe, you know. So
yeah. There
are things that make me look at our society and go, really? You guys are really into what this housewife did on some make-believe show?
Yeah, exactly.
Over something else. Not that I'm judgmental. Everybody is welcome to do it their thing, but I just see what so much of our society is attracted to, and I just, you know, we all have what we have and do what we do, and we all know how life is precious and short, so you just, whatever you have been given, you work with that and you just enhance it and maximize it to your fullest potential, because that's all we have.
Yeah,
I mean,
and
we're,
I think
human,
that's
beings,
what...
that's what we do.
That's what we do, and I think that's what carries us in the long run, you know, to where we need to be and where we're supposed to be. You know, I believe that with everything in me. And you know, and let's talk television for a little bit, because you have been on your fair share of television shows, and we'll get to film in a second. But, you know, right out of the gate, before I talk to you about your career in television, you know, it's no secret how television has changed. I mean, to me, you know, growing up, I grew up in the era of, you know, Happy Days, Laverne and Shirley, and all those great shows that, you know, American Bandstand, I mean, you name it, they were out there. And television has changed so much, you know, in the last couple of decades. And why do you, and I guess what I'm getting is, why do you think it's evolved to such a reality-based television genre that we have now that kind of dominates everything, everywhere you turn?
Economy and logistics and demographics. Reality shows are a lot more cost-effective for producers to make. And when you take polls and you see where people are liking things on Facebook and you're seeing who is tweeting what and what is being trended, those producers find content that match those interests and get these shows created overnight. And it all lends to a win-win situation for a lot of people, not so much for the actors, for actors,
right,
but for people that are really in it to make money, the producers and the networks and the advertisers. And when you can create, from a business standpoint, it totally makes sense. From the producer standpoint, it's totally like, really? You know, now we're going to be ousted out of more jobs, because why not produce a show that costs a fraction of what it does to produce a 30-minute or a one-hour show?
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
why pay so many writers to come up with witty and clever dialogue on a weekly basis for this amount of money when we can do it for a fraction of the staff and it's quote-unquote unscripted? You know?
Yeah.
With all of those components in mind, and then just with the way that technology is evolving and has evolved, like you said, in the past 20 years and continues to evolve daily currently. I'm sure there's an iPhone 8, like, being made right now. But, you know, it's like through the iPad and the iPhone and the smartphone and all these wonderful technological advances that we have, it's so easy for people to expose and introduce their product to the planet Eartha in a way that was never done before. And when you were watching Happy Days and American Bandstand, and I was watching the Mary Tyler Moore Show and I Love Lucy, the Golden Girls and the Carol Burnett Show, it wasn't as easy to say, well, I want to create a show about my garden, and by gosh, I'm going to do it within the next half an hour. I'm just going to go to my desk and write it all down and send out an email and post it on Facebook and tweet about it,
yeah.
And now I have it, you know. And we couldn't do that back then. And now you can.
It's
like, oh, my God, I have a bump on my head. Okay, we'll call it Bump It. We're going to make, it'll be two camera. Let's make a website about it. Okay, bumpit.com. And, I mean, within an hour, you can have a whole brand created for something that was just an idea out of your head. So that all brings me back to your question of why do you think television has changed to really that are being honed or the attention is being turned more to these reality shows is because of all of that, which all lends bases, all comes back to economy. They're more cost-effective to make, and people love them. Because, I mean, let's look at it like this. What if these low-cost or lower-overhead reality shows weren't doing it and weren't making those numbers in the Nielsen ratings and for advertisers? Then they would have fallen by the wayside, too. I mean, look at Breakdance. You know, we all watch these people dancing on their head for, like, a good, you know, a hot little minute. And, you know, and I watched all of that as a fitness person going, they are just causing so much cervical spine damage. And, you know, how long can that possibly go? Okay, when was the last time you saw, like, a breakdancer in the mall?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, okay. So, you know, if that had really taken off and, you know, that would have stayed rap music. It made an impact. It has stayed. Reality shows, it made an impact, it has stayed. I mean, the reality shows are no different in this in terms of trying to allure an audience than soap operas were and are, except soap operas are more to make than a reality show, because they're all steeped in, I mean, these reality shows, really, how real is all of that? I mean,
yeah, exactly.
How really real? I mean, it's like, let's rehearse this to look really real, guys. You know, let's run that unscripted line again, please. You know, so it's like with the soap operas, it cost more money to make them, but you still have this built-in audience that is attracted to fantasy,
mm-hmm.
and that is
mm-hmm.
attracted to something that's different than their life, or something that is the same as their life, and now they can observe it.
Yeah, exactly.
Think about it like this. These reality shows, a disgruntled wife can have her husband watch one of these shows with her, hoping that he'll glean something from it, because the character on the reality show is the same asshole that she's married to. So she's hoping
yeah.
that if he watches the show with her, he might get the hint, so to speak. So
yeah.
these reality shows are doing a lot for images. These young girls and teenagers are watching these shows, and they're looking at the all these reality superstars, and they now want to be them. And pattern, like everybody else, when Jennifer Aniston had a haircut, everybody wanted that. You know, it's always something.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
it's always some trend. And, you know, and now this is the big trend. It's like, I am just the Real Housewife of Encino. You know, and it's just like, you know, insert city here.
but none of the Real Housewives shows has made me want to become a Real Housewife. Does that make
quite
sense?
Exactly.
Like,
and then, you
yeah.
know, actually I was thinking, Dawn, too, because one of the shows you mentioned was Desperate Housewives that I was on. So I really
mm-hmm.
give my kudos and hats off to Mark Cherry, who is the creator of Desperate Housewives, because all these housewives show are a derivative, I feel, or a takeoff of his name, of Desperate Housewives.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I feel like all these plethora of the Real Housewives of here and of here, the word housewives is always used. That word became a household name because of Mark Cherry and the success
of right.
So I am very impressed with that. I love that it all comes from that, that a network show on ABC that Mark originally had trouble selling but finally got to sell it totally became a mega trendsetter because
mm-hmm.
now look at what it has parlayed, what its name and everything it was about has parlayed itself into.
Exactly.
So those
I mean,
four women, five women, including Nicolette Sheridan, who I love, I am so loving them for, like, you guys totally made a brand. You made a brand so poignant that, like, so many other shows are trying to model themselves after you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How fierce is that?
I know that, you know, and the creator of that show, who I bet he never envisioned in a million years that the things that have come, you know, since Desperate Housewives was launched and, you know, and it made its mark in television fame. I mean, it is iconic and, you know, it's one of those shows you just, you know, to be an avid fan of the show, you just hated to see the show come to an end. It was one of those that, for, you know, people will be watching reruns and DVD and, you know, that to death from now on. It's not going to ever
exactly
go away.
Can, but I'm proud of him for leaving at a time when they were on a high, you know,
yeah.
and that he was able to sustain it for as many seasons as he did. He also used to be, Mark Cherry also used to be a writer for the Golden Girls show that I mentioned, another fabulous show with extremely sublime writing. And so Mark Cherry, and he has a new show coming out now, Devious Maids. So he is very smart and very clever and playing this industry game so well. And that's what I really like about those kind of stories. Here's somebody who had a shop around, people saying, no, we don't want it, talking about Desperate Housewives. No, we don't want
mm-hmm.
it. No, we don't want it. Then finally ABC came around and said, okay, we'll take it, and then look what happens. So,
oh, yeah.
You know, you just never know in our industry. So, yeah, I'm very proud of him for being a trendsetter that way.
And, wow, just think of the naysayers that turned him down. I bet they are just kicking themselves many times over for having done so.
Well,
you know?
that's the plight of show business and the way it goes. You know, we all take a gamble on things, and some things that you think are going to be surefire hits are not, you know. And
mm-hmm.
it just that's why the business is so capricious and but so exciting at the same time. But
exactly.
And why tenacity always has to be a big part of it because – I mean, I'm just I very much believe that, because it's not something, unless you're just extremely lucky and timing worked in your favor this particular time, it does take a lot. And because now there are more ways to be overlooked and ostracized now because of our electronic life. So if somebody wants to be considered for a project, I mean, there's still tons of auditions, and our agents and managers are getting the breakdown, but it's so easy now from one producer to just email or text the other one. Well, you know, how about Don Mack for that? Oh, yeah, I love her for that. You know, okay, click, well, let's call her people and get her in. Okay, so with a conversation like that, well, that just ousted 200,000 actresses right there who would be perfect for that part. But this particular producer attached to that particular project was able to just be, you know, and get something like that. So, again, when you talk about all the competition and why I do sit back and revel in listening to what you say about me, because it's not easy. It's not, like, when I think back to how recently it seemed easier to get in front of the producers' faces and get on these shows, it's just more difficult now. And there's always going to be more people. But when you start using guest stars for a part that another actor of lesser notoriety could do, it just lessens the pot for everybody else. And that's just the way it is. That's another reason, Dawn, to answer your question about why reality TV is being so on the upswing, is because we as performers want to keep performing. It's like a drug addict. We want to keep having that in our system. And when it's not in our system, you get antsy and want to try, you want to find something else that's going to satisfy you or make you feel good that way. Well, God, I can't be on a TV show anymore. Well, okay, well, I'll create a webisode. You know, okay, well, then I'll be a radio host. Okay, well, then I'll be a voiceover artist. And only, you know, you go for the next. I'll buy a camera and I'll get a film crew. Okay, I don't have any money, but I'll raise money on Indiegogo. Okay, and I'll do that. So it's like it becomes like a drug, you know. Okay, well, I'm going to do the next thing to satisfy my need to perform or need to create. And if it's, I mean, think about it. If you and I, Dawn, could just decide, okay, let's have a reality show called, you know, Bicoastal Radio Host. And we just decided to do that, and we just made it very, okay, you film it out of your place and shoot out of your thing, blah, 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 blah. Think about how low overhead that is, as opposed to, like, now we have to rent office space and a studio space and a staff, you know?
That's right.
It just becomes more doable. Like, so many of my friends who have been so tenacious about making their own webisodes with one camera, they have no money, but they get them made and they get them out there because they're just headstrong about, I am not going to let the lack of opportunity stand in my creative way.
And, you know, and the whole crux and key to all of it is social media. If it were not for social media and the so many different platforms in which someone can promote themselves and put out there whatever message or platform they're wanting to promote, I mean, social media has made it possible for just average ordinary people like me, you know, doing a radio show, to celebrities wanting to take it to the next level and do something independent of, you know, a major network, that something they've been thinking about doing and just to do it. You know, it's really allowed people to be seen and heard like never before. And,
exactly.
And that's the beauty of it. You know, talking about television, I mean, you have starred alongside some of the biggest, you know, actors, actresses in the world, and you've had some tremendous opportunities, you know, to be in some big-time shows like Desperate Housewives. And who are some of your favorite co-stars that you've starred alongside?
Well, Marcia Cross from Desperate Housewives tops the list. She was absolutely lovely. She happened to be pregnant at the time when we were doing our scene. And we were doing a scene from episode 3, and they had actually moved on to episode 6. So it was all very rushed and hurried, but she was absolutely lovely to work with. Plus, I watched the show. So I had already been watching the show for 3 years, always wanting to be on it, and now my dream is, one of my dreams is now happening. So,
oh, wow.
that, and I got to meet Mark Cherry. So, and have, and Wendy Stansler directed the episode. So I was able to have a dialogue, just me and, like, little old me, Ralph Cole Jr., along with Marcia Cross, Mark Cherry, and Wendy Stansler for a network hit show. This is how we're going to do the scene and action. And we did it a few times, and I was out of there. So it was a wonderful experience. 2 and a Half Men with Charlie Sheen. Had a great time. I played his hairdresser. I actually didn't do his hair. I did Angus Jones' hair, who played the son. But I had a great time with Charlie and John Cryer and with Angus Jones. And they were all, and we actually shot my scene. It happened to be on my birthday. So it was just, they were very lovely to me. I had nice conversations with Charlie Sheen. We didn't talk about any of his, well, we did talk about his personal life, but we were talking about his kids and how he, at the time, he was helping his kids with his homework. So we just had some very honest behind-the-scenes conversations. And so it was totally lovely. I did a show called 20 Good Years with John Lithgow, and I just had so much fun with him because I had been, I had seen him in a Broadway musical, and I just was so enamored with him, and I just had always liked him as an actor that it was just a thrill to get to work with him and sing some of the songs. And Jeffrey Tambor was also in that show, who they were both real. I mean, everybody has been nice to me on every show that I've been on. They were great. I had a great time with Zach Braff and Matthew Perry. Zach Braff and I actually have the same birthday, speaking of, like, working on my birthday. But
oh,
my
wow.
favorite dessert is chocolate cake. So in the scene with Zach Braff and Matthew Perry, I'm serving them chocolate cake. So that was just funny. And we got
I mean,
the
improv. You know, gotta play it up because it's your birthday, you know? So, hey,
exactly.
How cool is that?
So, yeah, I've had a plethora of – you know, the thing that is lucky with me is that I have not had a horrible time on set. And I've just been very fortunate because whenever I'm on set, I'm always so happy-go-lucky and I'm so grateful to be there that I'm just really, really happy. You know, so I – I'm just fortunate that I haven't had one of those experiences where it's been like, oh God, this is tense or this is weird, and or if it has, it hasn't been in front of me, so you know I've been fine. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I could still go down the list because like every show I've been on, I've had fun with the stars that I'm working opposite, and they've all made me feel welcome. And usually it's like that because I mean, well, especially with the comedies, but even with the dramas too. You're there because they wanted you, because what you did at the audition thrilled the director and the producer. So, thrilled the director and the network approved it. So, great. You're their choice. They want everything to go well. So, it lends itself to being a fun time. And then you get to be creative at the same time, you know, so.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and the fact that you're so grateful for what you do and the opportunity, I mean, you don't take anything for granted. And I think that is, you know, half the battle won in this business anyway, is be grateful because then, you know, those opportunities just kind of present themselves. And when they do, you know, it's for me, it's like every time I book a guest for the show, I'm sitting here going, wow, you know, and I'm just so grateful because, you know, it could have easily been a no, as it could have been a yes. So you really have to kind of, like you say, look at the glass as half full and not half empty. And when you do, it really does make all the difference. I think in anything that you do. I want to talk to you about your movies because you have been so, so busy of late. I mean, my gosh, it's crazy busy. It makes my head spin, and I stay busy myself, but you've been in this movie called K-11. You played the role as KK. Now, talk a little bit about that movie.
Okay, well, the movie is directed by Jewel Stewart. It's a gritty prison drama. It's a genre that I had never gotten to play in before. I play one of the inmates that's filmed at the Men's County Jail in Los Angeles, and it's for the transgender, the homosexual, the drug addict inmates that would most likely be murdered if they were in the main line.
Mm-hmm.
And they did a section called K-11 for those type of inmates. And the film takes place, it's about a man who is mistakenly incarcerated into the K-11 section and struggle to prove his innocence and get out. That's it in a nutshell. And within that, he's immersed in this world of K-11, and I had the honor of getting to recreate a world for this film, along with some stellar actors who I am still friends with today, and it was a very powerful and moving experience because we actually filmed at Civil Brand Institute in East Los Angeles, which was a former facility for female inmates. So it was a very provocative and a very demoralizing and a very real platform and atmosphere to work under.
Wow, that sounds very powerful. I mean, and that's a wonderful concept for a movie. And really, if you think about it, a movie such as that really does get people talking, you know, on so many different levels. I mean, it's a great, you know, conversation piece and a great platform to open up some real good dialogue about this area, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. And it's based on a real story, so it totally lends itself to that. This real story actually got to be produced. So Jules Stewart co-wrote it, and with a guy that had actually been incarcerated. So it was from a true point of view, and that's what she was recreating through imagination and through filmmaking, recreating this world that this writer had been exposed to.
And those are my favorite kind of stories to watch on screen, those that are based on true stories, because...
Oh, yeah, because they're really real and they're gritty. And for me, because I'm just very musical comedy and situation comedy, it was such a great departure for me and to just be in this world, you know. And, I mean, there's still humor within this world, but it's different. And I was happy to capture that difference.
Oh, yeah. Another movie that you've been able to be in is that you started was How Sweet It Is. I keep thinking about that, the song, the saying, How Sweet It Is.
It's a musical.
And, wow, I mean, talk about that because it stars quite a few A-list, I mean, big names.
Goodness. How Sweet It Is. We're currently in theaters now, Planet Earth. So, you know, I'm totally going to plug my film because, and I have another film to plug, too. But right now, How Sweet It Is, we are on a fabulous roll. We just opened in Norwalk, California, and Los Angeles, and New York City. I mean, not Norwalk, California, New York, and the third place, which is escaping me right now. But for How Sweet It Is, it's a wonderful musical extravaganza. It's a mafia musical, Dawn, with jokes. Poe, Paul Sorvino, Erica Christensen, Eric Bergen, Michael Paré, Stephen Bailey, Michael Guadagnetta, Victoria Summer, the list just goes on and on and on. We're also in New Jersey, is our third AMC theater. The distributors were very smart with How Sweet It Is. They've opened up in three premier AMC theaters, at the AMC Norwalk Theater here in California, at the AMC Lowe's Village 7 in New York City on 3rd Avenue, and at the AMC 20 Jersey Gardens in Elizabeth, New Jersey. And we're starting there for a limited two-week run, and then hopefully we will be distributed to other theaters. And that movie is a great takeoff on a guy that owes the mafia mob money, and in exchange for him getting to keep his life, he has agreed to direct this musical using all the hoodlums who owes the mafia boss money. So it is like a hilarious send-up. And the greatest thing about this audition was Brian Herzlinger, the director, who is fabulous, didn't even know that I sang and danced, that it was totally up my alley. I got to sing and dance with Victoria Summer and Todd Sherry, who is hilarious, is in the movie, Louis Lombardi. I mean, it was just... it was just so much fun to do. Brian Kimmett, I got to co-star opposite Freedom and Nate Gies. We had a really great time. And the dancers, Lindsay Hart. I mean, there's so many people to name. But we all had such a collectively good time for the few weeks that we worked on this film. And the producer, Suzanne De Laurentiis, was so lovely to us, and Stephen Chase and Rick Finkelstein, that it just made everything a really, really fun experience. And how fun to get to sing and dance with all these fun people and work opposite Paul Sorvino. I mean, how often
yeah.
does that happen? And then Joe Piscopo I used to watch on Saturday Night Live. So
exactly.
He's so nice and so funny. That's the thing about this business that's so great to me. Oh, God, when you get to work with people that you've always liked or thought were fun, or for whatever thing, whatever reason moved you about them, and then you get to work with them, it's always such a great feeling.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. And for you, particularly in this movie, I mean, you got to really utilize all the things that you love, you know, singing, dancing, acting. I mean, you really had the best of all worlds, of all of Ralph Cole Jr. worlds, to put into this movie. And how rare an opportunity that must have been for you.
Oh, my God, we totally did. I am in high heels. I get kicked in the groin area. I am dodging bullets. Yeah, I went all over the place in this movie, and they let me go all over the place, and the producers wanted me to go all over the place, and I did.
Well, in its early, you know, run in the three different AMC theaters, are you getting any kind of feedback that it's going to, you know, possibly expand to other
theaters? Well, I actually heard from the distributor, and so far the word is good that it is going to continue. Because
awesome.
The reviews and, well, the turnouts have been wonderful. So we've had some sold-out performances, so that's very good. So it's looking very encouraging for How Sweet It Is. So that'll be K11 out running, How Sweet It Is. That's the thing, when you, like, it makes myself sound so full of me, but it's like, well, whatever, that I was in the movies and now they're all coming out together. Because the other movie that I'm in is a short film called Dirty Talk, and that little movie is totally making all kinds of names for itself on the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender short film festival circuit. It's a 12-minute short film about a guy that had a date where he was supposed to talk dirty and just could not bring himself to do it. I play the waiter in the restaurant. There are four of us star in it, Jason Bogue, Jeffrey Sumner, and Claude Knowlton. And Jeffrey Todd also makes an appearance in the film, and it is hilarious, 12 minutes. This is what I am proud of, Dawn.
Mm-hmm.
It's so funny how this business works, as we've been talking during this interview. Jeffrey Sumner and Jason Bogue had been going to different short film festivals and watching the different gay-themed movies, and we're like, you know what? We could really just write one ourselves. And Jeffrey Sumner thought, he is so prolific, just started an outline for Dirty Talk and just started thinking of some of his real-life experiences and culminated them all into this 12-minute film, held auditions, raised the money, produced it, directed, starred in it, was so nervous when we had our first screening, and we were like, it's fabulous, you guys. This film is really damn funny. Well, suffice it to say, we're like on our 18th or 19th film festival. We've won Best Comedy twice. We just won Best Comedy in Manhattan last month.
Wait,
are we still in May? No, earlier this month. I take that back, because we're still in the month of May right now. And
yes.
We just won that. We were just in Manhattan in, where am I not seeing it? Oh, anyway, I'm telling you we won, okay? Oh, in April, it was last month, sorry, April, New York City, and so we're about to be, and I just found out, right before we went on air, Dawn, I got a Facebook chat message from Jason, and saying
mm-hmm.
that we just got in our next film festival, which is the Kansas City Out There Now Festival. That's going to be in June. We're going to be in June, and we're going to be in San Diego at the end of the month of May. So we are in three more festivals. And I am so proud of all of us. And Jeffrey Sumner has done a wonderful job. And we are making the LGBT community very proud.
Oh, I'm sure. And you left one out, believe it or not. I have to congratulate you, because Little Birdie told me that you also won the Audience Award for Short Film at the Miami LGBT Film Festival. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you, Miami. Yes, we did. I'm looking at my list now. Yes, we won an audience award there. Woohoo!
Woohoo!
Yes. Oh, God, thank you for saying that, Dawn. Yeah, so, yeah, Dirty Talk is fierce.
That's right. It sure is. And it sounds like a great – well, I'm at – you know, I will just suffice it to say I've not seen it, But I can only imagine if you are a part of it, it is great. I know it is.
Oh,
because
thank
I've seen things that you have been in on television, and you're phenomenal. And so I have no doubt. I mean, it is no surprise to me that it's racking up the awards, and it will continue to do so. So,
I'm really, really pleased. You know,
I hope
and the
it
thing
gets
is,
to the East Coast so I can see it.
Oh, wait, say that last part.
I said, I hope it gets to the East Coast somewhere, like in North Carolina, so that I can check it out.
Well, yeah, eventually it's going to be on DVD, but while we're still enjoying this short film festival wave, that hasn't been released yet.
Ah, that's true. Well, we will anxiously look for that and can't wait for it to be out. In the event you guys don't make it my way, that is.
Oh, no, right. No, thank you, Dawn. I hear what you're saying.
Oh, yes. I have a question for you, and that is, as we've been talking about, you've appeared in many, many television shows, films. You have the early experience of theater. Which aspect do you enjoy the most?
I love the theater for the immediate gratification. I love the TV because it is, we're done, you do it, you're done, you move on to the next storyline. And I love film because I can luxuriate in my characters usually. And, I mean, I have to be a little more toned down than, I'm so bigger than life, I'm more toned down on film. But I get to luxuriate in my roles more, not necessarily with more rehearsal, but I get, just exploring my characters, I get a little more time to do that, whereas TV's a little more immediate. And the stage I get to luxuriate too in learning the lines and creating the character. But my favorite venue is multi-camera sitcom network TV. I love that. And that's my forte because I'm like Lucille Ball, I'm bigger than life, I'm very funny, and I like being big like that. And I like having the freedom that multi-camera work allows you. And that's my favorite. But each one I'm attracted to for the reasons I just said, but to choose my favorite, it would be the TV, the 30-minute sitcom TV format.
Oh, yeah. And what do you consider to be your most challenging role to date? Or have you had a challenging role? Because it sounds like this kind of works so well for you and you take it in stride and you're so grateful for everything you've done. Have you ever had a challenging role? I guess it's a better question.
Well, my most challenging one was K-11 because it was my biggest departure from who I am. Mm-hmm. And I have never been incarcerated, gratefully. So recreating that life was just very interesting, and just being very humbled walking through these halls of like, oh my God, this is what holding is like. Every prison movie or every prison scene on a 1-hour show that I've watched looks just like that, and now I'm here and this is really what it was like. So that, in that sense, it wasn't so much challenging as it was just thought-provoking. I mean, yeah, I was challenged. I guess when I think of challenge, I think of it, it was a little bit of a struggle. It was a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
It was a departure of ripping away a lot of my Ralphisms to create a character that the world had not seen. In terms of challenging, I did a role for the Los Angeles Theater Company a few seasons back called Dementia, and it is a riveting, pivotal theater piece about a man dying of AIDS who experiences dementia. And while he has dementia, he creates this alter ego named Lupe, who's this wonderful, sultry Cuban torch singer, played by me. And I sang and acted in Spanish and English 14 songs in four-inch heels. I didn't wear the 6 inches all the time there. Playing this person, and that is really actually my most challenging role to date. I've done drag. That's no big deal to me. I do it for film, stage, and television. But doing it in drag for the Latino Theater Company when I'm not Latino and I'm going to have a lot of Latino people in my audience, and it's based on a real character, Lupe, who is a wonderful singer in Cuba. I was terrified, and at the audition, I was like, oh, God, you guys can't find anybody Latino to do this part, and they go, we want you, and it's like, but, you know, I'm a good singer and all of that, but I mean, 14 songs, and, you know, I'm good about, you know, the shows that I'm in, I get a song or I get a lot, you know, it's like I'm good, I can totally sell it, but 14 and some in Spanish, oh, my God. So I was like, I took on the challenge and did it, but it all turned out great. People thought I was Cuban. They were surprised. They did not know. I came back out in the lobby after the show. They were like, where's your accent? And I go, oh, God, I'm American. They, you know, so I worked really hard with the Spanish-speaking community, with all my Mexican cooks, because I was the only non-Mexican in the piece. So it was that, like, that's such a great question you asked me, because I was thinking just solely film and TV. The film and TV usually has always been, film and TV mostly, I mean, I'm a character actor, but I still get cast very close to I am. I can play that sassy drag queen in the alley finding the dead body, and I'm very good as the guy next door who's very fun and whimsical and works in the as the dispatcher or the secretary or the best girl's best friend. I'm very good in those roles, so my film and TV roles have been indicative of that, the man waiting in line, you know, all of that kind of stuff. But in terms of, like, I now have to become somebody that's so convincing. And, you know, when I would have groups there of all the Mexican Lawyers Association in Los Angeles coming to see the show at today's performance with 250 of them, it'd be like, oh, my God. You know,
no pressure.
I have got to totally nail this, if, like, with every word and nuance that I say. And they all worked on me. I worked so hard on this. I was sick the first 2 days. In my waking up in the morning, like, oh, my God, what have I gotten myself into? Because once I had signed the contract and I said, like, oh, my God, I'm starring as Lupe in Dementia for Los Angeles Theater Company, once it's out there, it's like, oh, my God, I can't go back. What have I done? You know, so when I would wake up in the bed, I was really nervous. I was so nervous because I hadn't learned the songs yet. So it was also like I sang half the songs in Spanish. So I had to get them all translated. I did all the translations myself and then got it honed through the people in the company. But I had to go to a music person to take the songs down because the show had been done once before, 10 years before. And the guy who did it was a tenor, and I'm a baritone. So all the music had to be transposed for me. So that was a whole big thing. Then I had to go work with a live orchestra. And we had to learn each other's rhythm, and I would drive out somewhere in East L.A. and work with these wonderful band members and get all this stuff on a tape and then put it on the MP3 and then send. Oh, it was so much, but I did it all, and we got terrific reviews, and it's such a great feeling of accomplishment. Don't need to do it again, but it was such a great feeling of accomplishment, okay? And, you know, it was like, wow, I totally pulled that one off. So that I'm going to hold as my most challenging.
Oh, definitely. It sounds like it. And that is something that you can be very proud of. I mean, to accomplish, you know, on so many different levels. We're not talking just, you know, pulling off the singing or making sure you got 13 songs in Spanish down. I mean, this was huge. It was a huge undertaking for a sole actor to do. You know?
It really was. And plus, it was such an honor because they had done the show 10 years before, all Mexican. The other guy couldn't do it. He wasn't available 10 years later. And they hired me. And the Los Angeles Theater Company has such a resounding reputation of quality work and quality performers working there. I was honored to be a part of that. So I wanted to do them proud. Like the lead guy, Sal Lopez, he cried during my audition. He said, "You sang the song so beautifully that I had tears in my eyes listening to you." And it was like, wow. You know, and I moved these Mexicans. And that's the thing. We laughed with each other. They've adopted me. I'm an honorary Mexican. Because oh, my God, you guys, I just want to do you proud. I was so nervous for so long. Oh, and I performed that show on my birthday. That we had a birthday party together. And but it was so funny, like, oh, my goodness, what am I doing, you guys? But, can you imagine what it was like opening night, calling places?
Oh, wow. My wedding bullets, for sure.
And it was like, and the thing is, I love this about theater. See, theater was my very first start. I always get excited, like when the curtain is about to go up, or they call places, and we're all in our various places, and the stage was very provocative and dark, and it had this fabulous staircase, and of course my character was at the top of the staircase, but we would, like, you'd hear your cue, and you'd hear the music, and you'd get into place, and you're in that darkness, and then all of a sudden you hear your music cue, and the lights coming up, and there is no turning back. And it is such a good, my palms are sweating just recreating that, but it is such a great feeling, Dawn, that it was really, really powerful. And just knowing, like, I am commanding and running this show, and I'm doing it in Spanish, so hello. So
hello, is for sure.
Understanding me, yay! So, and I'm understanding, you know, I learned a lot more Spanish, let me tell you. But but anyway, yeah, and I still sing the songs because the songs are beautiful. But, yeah, that was a really terrific experience. Thank you very much for asking that question.
Oh, you're so, so welcome. And before we let you go, we've got a few minutes left. I was curious, are you working on anything new right now that you can speak of at least?
Well, my latest current ongoing project that I love to do and talk about is I'm also a radio co-host with the very affluent Jasper Cole. He has been an actor in Hollywood. He's Hollywood's bad guy. He's been an actor for over 25 years in Hollywood. And a couple of years ago, wanted to start a radio show about talking about all things entertainment and invited me to be his sidekick. And I am honored to be his sidekick. We're now at Universal Broadcasting Network, where we come live the first Sunday of each month. We have live and call-in guests, and we're on for 2 hours, and we have a rip-roaring time. And we used to be at Blog Talk Radio. So we have had a very wonderful journey. We're now syndicated. We're with Actors Radio, with Pepper J, and we just did a show. Well, each of us did a show separately at Radio Titans, and we are very happy to be aligned with Blog Talk and Universal Broadcasting Network, as well as Actors Radio. So, and more are coming. So our show has been widely successful. And that's why I introduced everybody as Planet Eartha, because that's how I refer to my listeners on our show. And Jasper and I are just very thrilled and happy with the success of the show. We've had one, like you, we are so grateful to get the guests that we've had. And because of the show and the guests that we've had, I've gotten to meet a lot of people in the industry, because it's people from all walks of the industry. So I get to rub elbows and talk to people and schmooze from Sunset Gower Studios in Hollywood once a month with fabulous people. So that's one of my current things. And then I could just go on. I'm just going to surmise it by saying I do have another feature film coming out by Chad Darnell. Chad Darnell wrote this great short last season called Groom's Cake. And like Dirty Talk, and Chad is also actually a donor for our film, Dirty Talk, Groom's Cake won all these awards. In fact, Groom's Cake and Dirty Talk have actually been in some of the same festivals together. And his Groom's Cake did so well that he received funding to create a feature, a sequel, which is a feature, called Birthday Cake. And then, which is so exciting, and then a year before that, he had been a guest on our show. So fast forward a year later, he writes a part for me in his movie. So I play the cake designer in Birthday Cake. And that movie has just become picture locked, which means it's all done. It's now being in post and in color editing. And it is going to be released next month in June. So that I'm excited about. So those are the things I'd like to just have your listeners know about. I'm attached to other independent films. Those will be forthcoming. It's always nice to be attached, and parts have been written for me. And I very much like that when people know me well enough to want to write something for me. So I'm looking forward to being a part of those.
Oh, gosh. And we are so excited to know that, you know, more stuff is forthcoming, and we look very forward to it for sure. And,
Dawn.
Thank you so much for being our special guest this evening. It has been such a blast speaking with you and hearing your stories of your career. And you've had such an amazing career and done so many wonderful things. And we so enjoy seeing you everywhere we turn. So thank you for being our guest this evening.
Thank you very much, Dawn.
Well, take care, and God bless, and enjoy the rest of your evening and week. And we'll be, we'd love to have you back anytime to talk about anything new you got going on.
Well, thank you, and I wanted to say thank you for tweeting about our show and my appearance on your show so enthusiastically.
Aw, well, thank you. We're always late to do that, so appreciate that as well.
Okay, have a great evening.
Same to you, and take care now. It's been so much fun.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Ah, the incomparable Ralph Pohl Jr. What a wonderful, wonderful man, and so much fun. I mean, I could sit and talk to him for hours because he, like me, is a talker. And so I was really excited to hear he is doing – I wasn't aware he was doing the radio stint over on UBN, but I will definitely have to check him out. And if you guys are a big fan of Ralph, please do so as well. And he just has so many things going. I thought I was busy. I mean, I have 3 radio shows. But he has a lot of irons in the fire as well, even more so than I do. And I can certainly appreciate how busy he is and all the things that he does. So, you know, it is quite the juggling act, but he seems to manage it very well. And he's such a happy, upbeat person. And, you know, I love talking with people like that because you can't help but smile when you hear them talk and how they're so enthusiastic about what they do and how passionate they are. So just incredible, incredible interview. We so enjoyed that and hope that you did as well. And, again, if you would like to follow Ralph, you can follow him on Twitter at Ralph Pohl Jr., J-R. And follow him, and, you know, if you tuned in tonight, you know, hit him up on Twitter, say hello to him, let him know how much you enjoyed hearing from him. And we will have him back again in the very near future to talk about any new projects that he may have going on. So with that, that is going to wrap our show this evening, and we hope that you sincerely enjoyed that. Now, coming up on Friday evening at 7 p.m. Eastern, we are so very proud to bring to you a pre-recorded interview that we did with Candace Cameron Buehr on Monday. And the only reason why she could not do it live is because she's been doing a press junket all week, back-to-back interviews pretty much all across the country for her GMC TV world premiere movie called Finding Normal, in which she stars in that. And so we had just a small window of time to speak with her about that. But it's a great interview. I think you're going to enjoy it. If you're a big fan of Full House and DJ Tanner, then you will want to tune in for that. We will be airing that right here live at 7 p.m. Eastern on Friday evening with Candace Cameron Buehr. So we're very, very excited to be bringing that to you. And with that, that is going to wrap our show for this evening. Thank you so much for being with us. And we certainly appreciate your loyalty. We always appreciate you being right here with us. If you're brand new to our program, welcome aboard. We're always glad to have you here anytime. So please, please do not be a stranger. You're welcome back anytime. Check us out. And so with that, enjoy the rest of your evening and the rest of your week. And we'll be right back here Friday, 7 p.m. Eastern, with our interview with Candace Cameron Buehr. Take care, all, and good night.
Thanks for listening to tonight's show. You can connect to Behind the Mic Radio on Twitter at BT Mic Radio and on Facebook at Behind the Mic Radio. Check out our website at BehindTheMicRadio.com. Also, follow us right here on Blog Talk Radio where you can stay up to date on all upcoming shows. Every episode is available for immediate download upon the conclusion of each broadcast and, as always, on iTunes. Thank you for joining us. Tonight's show has been brought to you by One Taste of Main Street Cake Shop. Baked from scratch, custom-made cakes and cupcakes, and you'll be hooked. Every cake is made to order with only the finest and freshest ingredients. This is no ordinary bakery. Cakes are never pre-made. Main Street Cake Shop is in demand, having provided cakes and cupcakes for numerous prestigious events, bridal fairs, and venues. Owned and operated by April Murray, she has garnered many awards for not only her exquisite cake designs, but also for their incredible taste. If you're looking for a cake for any occasion, or cupcakes in a variety of flavors, then Main Street Cake Shop is the place. Visit them on the web at mainstreetcakeshop.com.